Everybody put your hands together for Debbie.
I think so. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Debbie Spikes, alcoholic.
Thank you, Virgil.
When he asked me to do this about a month ago, I was like, really, dude? Don't put me, because it's been a while since I've spoke. This is in my face here. My sobriety date is 5/13/2013. I have a sponsor. I have a couple home groups. I have a day home group and I have a night home group. I belong to the Alpha Club, which is by the airport, the International Tampa International Airport. And now I'm even playing secretary for the board. So as time has gone, can you louder? Okay, because this I'm not sure. And in the day, by where I live, there's a morning group that meets three times a week called the Came to Believe group.
You're okay, sorry.
My husband plays music, and at 1:30 he's the singer. He's used to these things, not me. But anyway, I go to a day group at 10 o'clock, Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays. It's the Came to Believe group, and it's a book meeting, a big book, a 12 and 12, and a meditation meeting. So I've really centered in my recovery on book meetings and staying in the book to stay sober. And it works. The meeting that we do every Sunday morning faithfully, and I think we would invite you all to it. It's pretty awesome. And we help people go through the steps. In fact, I even have a sponsee, one sponsee from it that's doing quite well. And it's every Saturday morning or Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. So that was really helpful during Zoom. The Zoom land, you know, getting through that. But a little bit about my background. I'm originally from New Jersey. I've been here 16 years. Yes, Jersey the house, yeah. I brought my addiction with me, along with, after meeting the love of my life, the third marriage. So that's really the way my world was, even coming into Florida. I'm a teenager of the 70s, so and so a lot of, let me start here. I'm one of four, I'm the oldest and I'm the only girl. Divorced, dysfunctional family at a very young age, and I was pretty much raising my brothers, so my codependency ramped raging too. Which I'm blessed to have a sponsor for the last 6 years who really called me out on that and has really helped me with that, even regarding the sponsoring, because I was really trying to save people. I had the cape on, I'm chasing them, I'm doing whatever I can, you know? And even when I started working with her, she looked at me, what the hell are you doing, Deb? And I'm like, I don't know, you know? And I really didn't. But when she came into my world, I was almost 3 years sober and really opened up my eyes of how I could be helpful, but I didn't have to be enabling. But I was used to that caretaking all my life. But born in Jersey, parents got divorced around 13. And I had a little 5, 7, 9-year-old brothers. And so that became my world. And also in that world is we were left alone in the house. And so, I don't know about you guys, but with no parental guidance, it was pretty cruel, you know. So I'm smoking cigarettes at 12, by 13, or getting, you know, anything we could sneak in. And I don't know when I picked up my first drink, really. I'm sure there was a sip of beer here and there, but I remember my first drunk. And I was about, I don't know the exact age, it was 14, 15 years old. But I drank a half a bottle of scotch, and I was upset. I was not happy. And I remember drinking that, and I went into a big thing, I mean, full of, my life's terrible, that type of deal, which ended up me in the bathtub, head over, my first boyfriend holding my hair up as I'm puking my guts out. And I look back at that moment, and even when I came into the rooms this time, because I came into the rooms another time, but this time, I remembered thinking after that next morning, head pounding, I will never drink that scotch again. And I never did, but I drank everything else. For me, it was the feeling of what it did. It got me out of my head. And so for years, I managed it. At 17, I was bartending. The age was 18, but I was bartending. Had a bunch of friends coming in. This old man, Ed, ran this bar. And we just smooshed him, and we were bringing him business. And we had 50, 60 teenagers in there a month. I mean, this was the type of stuff we did. I was in Sussex County, New Jersey, so there was a lot of woods. You know, we went up there. My mother moved me to, at the end of my sophomore year of high school, with cows pasturing. I came from a high school, we were smoking cigarettes. We had a smoking lounge. And I'm looking at this small little high school, 7th to 12th grade, with cows pasturing. I was like, where the hell did you bring me? And it was a smaller class, so you had the people that partied and you had the people that were smart. And you know, I played both roles. I was a National Honor Society the whole time. I don't know how I did it, but I had that capacity of memorization. It's gone now. But I had some brains, and actually I was supposed to, when I graduated, I had a full scholarship paid to a girls' school, Centenary College, for fashion merchandising, and I got pregnant. A lot of decisions I made during those next so many years just was one after another. I do have a son. In fact, he'll be 42 years old this year. And he did follow me down into Florida, but that's another whole story. Since I've been sober, he's not been in my life, and it's his choice. But that's where that saying, let go, let God, because I have to let God handle that. Breaks my heart. Love that boy. He followed me down at 25. I thought we were good. But that's one that's been I struggle with, but not as bad. And I thank God to what I've learned in these rooms and practicing these principles and going into acceptance and letting go and letting my higher power. When I came in, just a little back, going back a little bit, I had two marriages before 1985, and both of them didn't even make a year. So the marriage I'm in now, I didn't marry him until 2006, so I took a 20-year break, and I wasn't good at that, you know. Plus, I was doing my thing. But in 1994, there was a lot going down. I worked for this kind of strange boss and everything, and a lot went down. I had my house set on fire, a rental house I was in. My son was 10 years old. It was my doing. I had a part in it. I was, you know, leading people on that I shouldn't have, and I got payback on it. But he had a nice Jaguar, and he kind of had a lot of money, and would give me everything I wanted. And I got paid back for it because he didn't want to do the friends thing and poured the kerosene through my house. So when I did my steps and a lot and finally conceded here to my innermost self, I was done. I had to look a little back and all these decisions I had made. But in 1994, that was another, that's when I found the rooms of AA. And I was up in New Jersey, and about 6 months before that, I was sitting at a pool where I was living. And so it was in the summer, and there was this girl that I went to CCD with years back. And she was telling me, we were sitting out there, I've got my tumbler full of vodka, and she's drinking all the water. And I knew her, and she knew me more than I thought she knew me, because, you know, she proceeded to tell me how she had been 10 years sober. And I was like, huh, well, that's cool, that's good for you, you know, and everything. And, but she's a nice gal. And so we sat, and I'm drinking my clear liquid water tumbler full of vodka. You know, she's doing her thing. And But anyway, I was in another rough relationship at that time. In fact, it was my boss, 20 years elder. And I was pissed off. And it was around this time, March, because it was St. Patty's Day. And somehow he had broken up with me or something. I really don't know the circumstances, but all I do know is that I went, I had to take care of the pain. So I went out. And I went bar hopping on my own. And last thing I remember was drinking something green. And the story went on a little bit longer, but he found me and told me that if I did not stop drinking, my condo that was involved with my work, and he was over with, and he was gonna take my job. And I was 15-year-old, and I thought, oh crap, I gotta do something. So, and I knew I had a problem. I knew it, but I needed to salvage this. So he said, you better go to that AA. And I was like, oh crap. So I looked up in the phone book and I found a Sunday meeting the day after. And I crawled up, it was a meeting that was up on the third floor, and I'm standing across the street watching people smoking cigarettes going up and down, and I'm like, oh crap, it was the walk of death. And I made it there, and I made it up those three flights of stairs, and the door opened, and I'll be damned, that girl was there. And she said, you want a cup of coffee? And it was a room of 60 people. I'm like, yes. But I hung around the rooms for about a year. But unfortunately, after she became my sponsor, 2 months later, she was in a relationship that she had to flee and go up to Austin. So she turned me over to Maureen, and then Maureen turned me over, and I wasn't hearing the message. I wasn't hearing about progression. I didn't do steps. I wasn't even the reading. I had a third edition, which I did when I moved down here, put it in Goodwill, because someone could probably really use this, you know? Because that's when after I picked up, because I did not drink or do anything else for a period of about 6 years. And I truly am thankful for that time, because I think it gave my body a lot of time to heal. Because I had done a lot of stuff, and but I'm talking party material-wise. I mean, it was out of control. But I was able to step up for my son, who was 15, and I was able to get him for those next 6 years through high school and through some tough times. Sober, as a sober mom, or I should say a dry mother. I was dry because I stopped going to AA. I stopped going because I got bored. And I wasn't learning anything. The big thing is where we're going for coffee after the meeting. And I don't know why it worked out that way, but it did. And I left and I said, I can do this on my own. So, and it says in our big book, you know, do it on my own, you know, take time away. And it did work, because once he moved out of the house, I got him through school. I'm about to be 40, and I'm bored, and my life is good. I got a condo now I purchased, my son's out of the house, I've got a nice car, I got a good job, and I'm mature now. And that lasted for a 13-year run, till May 11th, 2013. It was Mother's Day weekend. I met my husband down here. I picked up, and within 3 years later, I'm off. I mean, I'm partying. I'm doing my thing. I even ended up at one weekend in Green Iguana in Key West. Somebody said, hey, we're going here, follow the bands, I'm in. I mean, that's kind of where I was, and it was like I never stopped. Because I always kind of had I had high tolerance for the liquor. I was a real skinny, skinny little thing. I look at pictures back then, I look like a prisoner of war, but I could drink with the boys. I could do 1-for-1 pound, and I just had this high tolerance. So anyway, within the first couple years, I'm going to town, and then my girlfriend invites me down to Florida. She says, Deb, I've been down here 15 years. I haven't. She goes, the last 14 years, I've had an annual strawberry party. This was in March. And she says, and this is the last one, and the theme is the 70s. So I had gotten rid of that boyfriend and this, and I said, I'm in. And I came in down, and I'm doing some dating up there, and I'm having a good old time. And I get off the plane, and she goes, oh, I have a friend that needs some loving. And I'm like, oh, please, I'm not down here for this. And oh, he's got a child. Now I'm not into that. And well, next thing I knew it, I'm standing in her house by the sliders. This guy comes in, this little girl comes in, this guy comes in, and I'm like, ooh, wow. Needless to say, a year later, I leave my job, I sell my home, and I'm moving to Tampa, and we're moving in. And that's my current husband, amazingly enough. But he partied like a rock star, just like me. So for the next 8 years, that's what we did. He had adopted his niece. His sister was murdered up in Tallahassee. He's a Florida boy. And she had this child in prison. She was running the streets, and she had passed. She was, like I said, murdered. But this little girl was 6 years old, and I'm thinking, hey, I can do that. I'm a mom. I've been doing this all my life. There's that codependency. And as time, not being in sound mind, made this decision to make this commitment, and within a year or two, this child with special needs. And for the next 10 years, it was hard. It was hard. She's in a group home now. She's doing well. She's 25. I mean, it all worked out, but I'm telling you, it was hell to get there. And it was just enough to fuel the drinking. He had been in a band. Then the band ended because he wasn't showing up. I mean, we're partying now, home partying. And I'm still trying to reach for it. Trying to reach for the high and getting into other things because the booze ain't work. And I remember getting angry. It'd be 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon and saying, damn, you know, I'm drinking all day and I can't even get a bus. I mean, I must have been in a blackout, but that's kind of how it became. I ended up leaving the job I was at because she was 15. It was hard to put her in school, blah, 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 blah. So the last 3 years of my drinking were morning, noon, and night. And it wasn't pretty, and it got, which led me to this bottom, which was, it was one heck of one, and I didn't even see it until I was a good, probably year and a half sober. But whatever happened that Friday morning on May 11th, I woke up, nothing had happened, there was no arguments, he had gone to work, she went off to school. And I'm sitting there, 9 o'clock in the morning with a drink in my hand, and I said, I can't do this anymore. I remember distinctly saying, I need a rubber room. I gotta be removed from society. And it was like, it was so real to me. And I picked up the phone, and I made a call to this place that this psychiatrist that my husband sent me to 3 months before that. See, my dad was dying through all this too, and I was facing him dying, stage 4 lung cancer, going up there, taking care of him, my world, my husband, my son, I got, there's so much. My son had a really bad car accident, and it was kind of suspected that he tried to do it purposely. But all this was coming down on me, and I mentally was losing it. But I had this thought that I need, this something has to happen. And it's so real to me to this day, and I think this is, it's what, it's that spiritual experience, and I didn't even know I had it. But all I know is that I made this phone call that this little piece of paper this psychiatrist gave me, and I called it. And she said, well, can you come in this afternoon? I said, no, I can't. I could be there Monday morning. It's Mother's Day weekend. And you know that, Nick? I called my mom. I said, Mom, I need help. I need you to be here with this child. And I got to go somewhere. And she showed up. And I went there, I had to drink. I could not stop drinking. I had to drink, but I had enough that I knew that would get me through the Sunday. And I went in Monday morning, and it turned out that this place was about 2 miles from my house. I've been driving by the damn place for about 8 years. It's Turning Point, Sheldon Road. So I couldn't even, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to come have a cigarette, you know. And it was starting already because I'm crawling out of my skin. But it was so profound that when I knew, even that weekend, I was drinking, but I was drinking because I had to. And I knew I was going there Monday. There was no iffy thing. It was that I made a decision. And here, my dad ended up dying. I was 5 weeks sober. I came out of detox after 5 days. They wanted me in treatment, and I said, no, I got to go see my dad in Pennsylvania. He's dying. And there was no way that nobody was going to tell me when to go to bed and get up, and I wasn't going to have any of that. Plus, you got $1,500 of my money already. This is bullshit, you know? So here I'm still in control, you know? But I went to my first meeting. It was in the Town and Country area, the Sunshine Group. And it was an outdoor group, and I was like, yes, because I couldn't breathe, you know? I mean, it put me in a room, I just couldn't breathe. And I remember going to that, I remember the feeling of going to that meeting. I don't remember my first many meetings, but that I remember was like, again, the walk of death. I gotta go back to that FNAA. But I knew I had to. I knew it was, and as we hear in the rooms, it was the last house on the block. I knew I belonged there. I knew that from 20 years before that was where I needed to be. And it was tough the first year. On the sideline, my husband's still drinking and partying like a rock star. And I watched that for 2 years and 2 months, every day. And even people today said to me, how the heck did you do that? I had to. You know, but I learned a lot from it. I learned a lot from it because now I'm reading the big book. I'm hearing about the progression. I'm learning about the progression, and I'm learning about this allergy, which I thought was a bunch of crap at first. But you know what? To me now, the definition of an allergy is an abnormal reaction to liquid, eating, whatever. And I have an abnormal reaction to booze or none of that stuff. I want more. It just triggers something and I am off, and I know that now. Learning about the moderate drink or the hard drink or the real alcoholic, that was a hard pill to swallow because and probably at around year and a half, 2 years, it was like after reading that over, Deb, you're the real deal. You know, there's no doubt about it in my mind anymore. But watching him proceeding, living with a drinker, it was really probably the best thing that my higher power put in my face because he showed me what it looked like. I didn't know what it looked like. I was in it for so long, you know. And I'm reading this book and I'm seeing it in live action, you know, about the progression, this and that. But he, thank you God, I went to the International Convention 2015, and I went on a bus with a bunch of people from Rebo's Club in Pinellas, and we had a great time, and on the way home, I got a text, and it's him. I can't do this no more. What do I do? I remember looking at the friends I'm with, I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? So now I'm living with a newcomer for the next couple of years. But anyway, needless to say, we're both sober, and that's been I could talk about that probably for another hour and a half. But it's just been an amazing ride. Sponsoring has been the key in my recovery. In fact, yesterday, I've been nervous about speaking because I don't want to plan what I'm going to say or anything, but last night I was able to sit outside on our deck, nice comfortable rocking chairs, table with an ashtray for her, this newcomer, that was just struggling. And, you know, I thought how coincidental this is. I got a new person right there in front of my face and I'm gonna speak tomorrow. And this is what I do, you know. And I saw the pain, and I'm seeing the pain, and the crying, and the remorse, and I'm like, retire the bat, break out your feather, sweetie, it's gonna be all right. And she hasn't, this isn't her first time around, you know? And I think she's willing enough, you know? But going through these process and these steps, I know when I came in, steps 1, 2, I knew I belonged here. 3, the God thing, very difficult for this ex-Catholic. And that took a couple years. But with a friend of mine, Russ Kay, in this program, we started a meditation meeting up at the Alpha Club. I was only a little over 2 years sober. And that meeting went there for 5 years, every Saturday night. And I've met a lot of the people here from the old school group because they were our speakers. And they would share their story about how they found their God. You know, it was all about the 11th step. And man, I could really see from listening to all these different people and take a little nugget from him and her, perform my own. Because it was a real struggle for me. But then it was also the feeling, you know, like it's within me. It just, to me, I still find it, and I can't believe 2 months, I've been at 9 years, but it's still hard to explain how that higher power worked in my life. I was one for, didn't think that everybody read and pray, you have to do that in the morning, you know. So for the first 1.5 years, I didn't do that, you know. I'd be like, thank you, God, and I woke up, you know, and that was it. But now I have a ritual that I love, you know, I love. I have this little meditation I listen to, I do these readings. So I've learned to practice all these principles. I've learned another big, I have some little more time, right? All these little aha moments I had, you know, and to me, I didn't see as those little parts of those awakening over the years, which started making sense. And I know a big one for me was working with others, reading through the book with these girls, just sitting down reading with these girls and going through their steps. I found myself, I'm doing my own steps again, as they tell us, right? And it was probably, maybe a few years back. I was well into 5 years of this. My sponsor gave me a bag of marbles in my 5 years. And then she tells me 10 years, she's awesome, and she likes to cuss a lot, but she goes, in 10 years, you know what to have to do with them, you know? So I'm having the privilege of giving 5 girls their bags of marbles this year, bringing them through the steps. It's awesome. But it was a big aha moment for me but like kind of going through the steps where I finally like saw the flow of how they worked in their life. I was always a linear thinker. Step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4. But it's just like, wow, we all plan. Wow, we just work them in our lives every day. It's what does it say? It becomes a working part of the mind, you know? And I'm like, wow, they're right again. You know, because it was a lot of that, like, oh, that's what they mean by that. I mean, at the beginning, it was like, I'm hearing the first drink gets you drunk, and I'm like, you know, they don't know how to drink, you know. I mean, but really, I was critical. I thought, coming in the rooms, I'm older, and these young folks, what are they going to teach me? And I learned a lot. But I do know that I had to keep coming back, even though at that 1.5 year mark, I was having some experiences with people in the rooms, and I had a real bad problem of, I was really concerned about what people thought about me, what they said about me. And I had to have that sponsor who came in my life and said, what people think about you, Dad, when you do your business. And I'm like, yeah, but because I want to have friends. I've never really been the one who was friends. I mean, years ago, I could walk into a bar and make a shitload of friends. I had no problem doing that ever in my drinking days. But did I ever have real close relationships? No. There's times in my childhood that I still to this day remember. And I remember talking to this one gentleman at one of the 11-step retreats I went to, and I said, I'm really concerned. I said, I was a Girl Scout at one time and a Brownie, and I did some tap dance. I said, but I don't remember anything about the experience. And he said to me, you know, be careful. Be careful how much you're digging. You know, your God, your higher power will reveal when you're ready to deal with it. And I have found that. There's certain things that have came back that probably weren't too pleasant. But at least I'm able to emotionally deal with them. I'm able to deal emotionally with a lot of stuff. I mean, I love my boy. I'm going to go back to my boy. In fact, from what I heard through the grapevine, I had a granddaughter that was expected this week, March 5th. I don't know if she's here or not. It's been a week. And that would be my sixth grandchild, which are not in my life. But, you know, I try to make the amends, as the 8th, 9th step did, and he did come in my life for about 6-month period, about a year ago, and I thought we were good, and then something happened again. So I don't know, I don't understand, but all I know is that I think my higher power, God's protecting me from something, I don't know, but am I willing? Am I willing to sit down with that young man? Am I willing to say, hey, let's take these last 8 years and put them behind us? A year ago, I told him that. I'm like, honey, I just to have you in my life. And it changed again. So I don't know. But without this program and without practicing these principles and what I've learned, acceptance and forgiveness and all that, I'm okay with it today. I can live my life and feel that there's a purpose for God has the plan, right? God has the plan. I don't know it. I got no crystal ball there. Damn, I wish it. But working with others, when these girls go all over the place, I'm like, yo, you know, if I had that crystal ball, sweetie, I would tell you what's going to happen, but I don't know, you know. My newest thing today is because I've been forgetting a lot lately. So I got myself a big-ass calendar like I used to have when I was working. So now what I'm doing is I'm writing down in a day what I need to do. And so I've been finding myself saying it, and one of my girls said to me, she goes, wait, was that a new one? I'm like, excuse me? And I'm like, you know, I'm staying in the square of the calendar. That's all I need to do today, because I got to remind myself, too. I got to stay in my day. I have this future-thinking mind, which is totally ridiculous. And none of it's true, you know. I've learned so much from being around the rooms here, and I plan to hang out a lot more. And working with others, I'll still go back to it. That's why I love this Sponsortron meeting. I mean, and what we do is just open the book. It's in the book. The instructions are in the book. And it's so obvious, like even just recently at one of our meetings, you know, it was, you know, making the amends process. And it's that little paragraph, I don't know what page, Virgil, because he knows pages. I'm like, you know, I don't remember. But the instructions of doing an amends, you know, it was right there in 3 sentences. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. You know, must have read it 50 million times, yet when working with others, you know, run by me before you do, you know, you say you were around it, but there it is right in the book, you know. So I've learned a lot from that, and I thank you, Virgil, for having that meeting. And it is awesome seeing the people that we've been able to help there. I got a wonderful sponsee from that meeting who just happened to get on because something in her heart, it was from a relapse. Told her to find a meeting, and she just eeny-meeny and found our meeting, and we've had her ever since. And that was that's been about almost 2 years. And John and everything. But I could probably go on and on and on and on. But hopefully I was able to give you the gist of the way this my journey has been. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. I know that because I know me. I have learned, I mean, I never want to feel again the way I felt when I went into that that morning, when I went into that detox, when I walked out of that detox, when I walked back into that first meeting. of thinking, wow, what a piece of crap you are. You know, look at you. You know, 52 years old, and I was empty. I would be asked, how are you feeling today, Debbie? I'm looking at him like, what the hell are you talking about? The first feeling that came back was anger. I was pissed. I was pissed I couldn't drink, but I really didn't want to drink. I didn't know what I wanted, you know. But I've been able to find myself. I've been learning to find my voice. I've been not so worried what other people think about me anymore. I try to be a good person. I try to treat people the way I want to be treated. I find that in the rooms of AA, we're a bunch of drunks trying to get better, you know. And I call it with the girls, because they might have some bad experiences with other girls, or somebody said this, and they're trying to, you know, not feeling comfortable. And I tell them my experiences. I've learned so much from these rooms. And we learned how to play nice together in the AA playground. And boy, if this isn't the best practice ground, I don't know where else you can go. Because if we can kind of get a good grip on it in these rooms when we go out in the real world, that was another thing. When I came in, oh my God, my life is only going to be AA. It's just going to be about AA. Oh God, I'm only AA. And that's not true. I'm learning in here so I can function out there. You know, and again, all these I mean, our life is pretty good today. It's really damn good today. But it's taken 7-9 years. You know, not spending thousands of dollars on party materials and booze and cigarettes. We're both cigarette free. I mean, we've worked at this. It's been hard. But within the last year, we got ourselves a nice RV. When circumstances outside of our control happened, we were sitting in the woods in Brooksville with our dogs, staying safe, you know, and we were able to do it. Not no rash decisions. We were able to put a plan in action. We never could afford any of that 9 years ago. I mean, there was just no way that would have been possible if we were to continue to do what we were doing, you know? But anyway, I guess I'll be rambling on if I don't shut up now, but thank you for listening to me, and yay, SoberStop!